Hey y'all, this is Nida and you're listening to Underground. So today we're going to delve into a genre of underground music that we've never talked about before. We're going to talk about bass music and we're going to do that with Anna Morgan. She's based in New York. She has her very own record label which is called The Worst Behaviors Rec, which has been listed as one of the labels to watch out for in 2020 by DJ Mag. She's a DJ, producer, promoter. She's going to take us through her DJing techniques, production techniques, her secret plugins and a lot more. I'm so excited because she's my very first female guest on the show. Hey Anna, how's it going? I'm so excited you're on my show.
Thanks for having me, Nida. Nice to meet you.
It's so nice to meet you too. It's so lovely to meet someone who's so enterprising. You have a record label, which is a Worst Behaviors Rec. You're a producer, you have a radio show, and you are a DJ. You've been DJing since how long?
To be honest, it's relatively new, maybe about 6 years. I still feel like a baby as DJing and music and production. You know, it's such a deep lifetime path that it really just feels like the beginning for me.
So how did you find your love for such a niche sound?
I mean, it's kind of a long story, but ultimately I'll say that, you know, I've been a raver for more than half of my life. So for me, like the rave and like the dance community is where I first kind of felt comfortable in my own skin and felt like connected to a community of people who were like-minded. And so a lot of my passion and love for music is also very explicitly linked with community. And that's one of the reasons why I do things like create platforms, like having a label or throwing nights, you know, to support the community and bring people together. Because for me, that's a really big part of it. Mm-hmm. And like why I love music is that it's a way of initiating joy in a cultural and communal setting. Yeah. But so for the aesthetics part, why I kind of got into what I'm really into, a lot of it has to do with my background. I think as a raver, like I always was really into jungle and drum and bass. And I love that it's an experimental kind of genre where there's a scope for a lot of different sound inside of that. And I've also been really into club music, like local club music, like Chicago Footwork, for instance, is a very like local club music, you know, or like yeah. Jersey Club, Baltimore Club. And I'm also half Jamaican, so sound system culture is like a big part of like when I first heard Raga Jungle, I was like, oh my god, here are these like 90s dancehall classic vocals over this electronic dance music. And for me it was like the best combination of both worlds. So a lot of the music that I follow tends to be this relationship between sound system culture and like the rave scene, you know, and the places where those meet that reflect like a sense of like urban culture is kind of like what makes me happy, you know, when I'm listening or also producing. Like those are the things that I'm like really connected with. I guess that ultimately you could say that that has a lot to do with the kind of the niche. I just realized also like me and Bell Curve, who also run the label, we one of my friends had started a like beat a week group where just a very small handful. There was like 7 of us and we were making tracks and putting it into this like group Dropbox. Like once a week on Sunday, we would put our tracks in there, our beats that we made that week. And then we would just listen to each other's stuff. And we were just committed to doing this for a year. And I realized wow. that a lot of us were doing a similar aesthetic. Like we were all listening to a lot of the same stuff. And so we were all kind of working with this kind of like hybrid cross-genre sound around 160 BPM, 170 BPM. Even though we had kind of slightly different musical backgrounds, this was the stuff that was bringing us together. And so I realized that there was no real like house for it, but there was several of us that were DJing like this, where we weren't just playing straight footwork sets. We weren't just playing straight jungle or straight D&B sets. We were doing this hybrid of like mixing a lot of these sounds, and we were doing it with our production as well. So Worst Behavior Rex was kind of an attempt to house a lot of those, that spectrum under like one umbrella.
That sounds really fun. So when you're producing, your productions are known to be pretty genre fluid. So when you produce, what kind of, what do you follow? Or do you have any processes?
Yeah, you know what? I don't really have a process. Like for me, production was an extension of I'm a DJ first. Basically what happened was I started DJing and then kind of early on I started making edits for my sets, you know, just to play out in my sets. And I didn't know that like, you know, edits were like a thing you could share with other people, but basically what was happening was I would play these edits out and then other DJ friends would be like, "Yo, what is this? Can I have it?"
You
So then
mean
I
like a
started pass.
sample, like a batch?
Oh, I mean like I would take like, you know, a lot of it would be like blends that came organically out of DJing, where I'd have like a vocal sample or a melodic sample from one tune that was like a banger or a classic, and then I would mix it with, you know, maybe like a rhythm from a different tune or a different style of music. And so I would make these edits that were combining these ideas. Pretty simple, but that was my introduction to production, was basically like making new edits to put into DJ sets that I was like, oh yeah, people will, the dance floor will like this, you know? And so other DJs started asking me for them, and then I was like, okay. And so one of my friends was like, Dr. Jeep, I don't know if you know this producer, but he's a super good friend of mine. And he was like, oh, you should put maybe some of these edits up. I feel like people would really like them. And I was like, can you do that? Like, this is basically just other people's tunes that I'm just, you know, like flipping. And he was like, oh yeah, no, it's totally like, you know, acceptable. You can do that. And I was like, all right, cool. So when I started putting them up, that started other people outside of my community of friends started playing them. And that kind of got my name
I need to cut
circulating.
you off because I really want to know this because I feel like usually when you do that, you have copyright issues. So where do you really put them out? Because I've faced that before and I just thought that they're off limits. So
Yeah. So I don't like, I mean, I don't generally put them out unless like the sample is a sample that's like kind of an older sample that's like heavily used, or like for instance, like I have an edit that people play that's a Footwork Jungle remix of a Mala track, and I've never put that out. It's like only my friends have it, just because like I asked Mala, like, you know, I sent it to him. He was like, oh, I really like this, but like I can't clear the copyright, you know. So I was like, he was like, it's cool for you to play it and send it to your friends, but like I can't officially like have you put it out because I'm already like in a copyright lawsuit with someone for using the same sample, and it'll look bad if I say you can use it. And I was like, okay, yeah, no worries, you know. So sometimes there's, and usually what happens is if it's someone that I know or I'm connecting with, that's not like a giant, you know, star kind of thing or whatever, I'll just reach out and ask them. But if it's, and people are, you know, they tend to be cool with it. If it's kind of like a big name, you know, like there's one like Rihanna kind of flip I did a while back that a lot of people are playing, like a Cardi B one, then I just keep it, it's just like my homies have it, you know, then it's just like for that moment. But
That's
yeah, it
cool.
kind of got those edits kind of got my name circulating, and then labels started asking me for original productions, and I basically was just like, okay, yeah, I'll try to figure it out. So for me, like there was no like intention of being a producer. It was more a thing that was, I guess, asked of me. You know, so I was like, okay, cool, yeah, I'll figure this out. So there's no like real, I guess the process is quite different all the time. I don't even really have like a template or like a really clear like workflow. It's something that I do want to develop because I'm working on an album right now for like a pretty big label, and I realize that it'll help my workflow a lot to like, you know, be a little bit clearer about templates. So for this project, what I'm doing is I've just collected a bunch of, I have like kind of an aesthetic that I associate with like my version of that label, and then I have a folder, you know, with a lot of sounds that I'm like, okay, this is the limits. Like, you can't use any more sounds than what's in this. I find that creative limitations really help me a lot. If I'm just like, okay, like I'm limiting this project to like only this idea or only this grouping of sounds, then it's easier for me to like work instead of just having like all the infinite possibilities open to you. Because like now you can literally do whatever with any kind of sound, any kind of rhythm, you know, like just with how the hierarchy has been broken down, because you have access to things like Splice or something, you know, where you can like download a million sound packs of any style or test drive all these different synths and plugins and stuff.
So I also wanted to know, since you said that they asked of you to start producing, and before that you were not really into that. So what were these little segments that the little edits that you used to make, what did you make those on? Like, did you
Ableton.
Ableton? Okay, so
Yeah.
you were kind of into production, just not like full time.
I actually wasn't really. I kind of just was like, essentially, I was like, oh, I have this idea. How do I do this? And then, someone was like, oh, you could do that in Ableton. And I was like, okay, sick. And so I just was like, let me figure that out. Like, I'm gonna sit here and, So then it's really just been like kind of an organic journey in that sense. Like I learn as I go along.
That's lovely. So, tell me about your label. What's been the journey for Worst Behaviors Rec been like? Like, how did that happen? How did it begin?
Yeah, so that label was kind of a direct result of me meeting and becoming friends with Bell Curve, who's my partner in the label. I was throwing a festival with some friends in El Salvador. So a really small, like 250 person festival that was in this on this like private kind of like a surf hostel bungalows on the beach. Oh, quite a few years back now. Maybe like 3 or 4 years ago. 4 years ago. But like 4 years ago. I was booking all the DJs and curating the lineup for that festival. So I booked an artist who goes by Rakita. She's also a Jamaican artist who is based in Boston. And they brought Bell Curve. So that's the first time I met Bell Curve, and that's the first time Bell Curve had been like to a festival or even had been surrounded by. I booked a lot of like my girlfriends, I booked, had a lot of women there. Because that's really important to me in terms of yeah. So she brought Bell Curve, who also was kind of like a budding like DJ, was really interested in it and hadn't really seen so or met so many other like women that were doing music before and was really inspired by it. And she basically was like, I was going to play Outlook for the first time that later that year, and she was like, oh, I really want to go, and I had extra guest passes and room in my Airbnb, so I was like, yeah, you can just come with me. And so on that trip, we really bonded, and I had created a bunch of edits actually to play in my set that was basically using. I decided to play like a 160 kind of like footwork heavy set because I was one of the few Americans on the lineup, and even though I play a lot of UK sound system like bass music, it didn't make sense for me to do that at Outlook because all the producers that created those sounds are already there. So I was like, what's uniquely American that I can add to this conversation? And so I at the time was playing a lot of Chicago footwork and music that was influenced by it. So I was like, cool, I'll do a 160 set because like no one will hear that anywhere else at the festival. And then I decided, well, how do I present a 160 set to people that don't know this music because it is so niche and it is kind of new, like rhythmically, and not a lot of people are like, a lot of them are like, people be like, this is really fast or like, what, you know what I mean? Like that kind of stuff. So what I did was I made some edits where I used samples from classic grime tracks, classic dubstep tracks, and then I mix them with like footwork so that people would hear those classic samples. And I feel like this is a trick in general with any kind of audience when you're trying to like essentially educate them or introduce them to something that's new to their experience, for them to be able to accept it, you kind of mix it with something they're comfortable or familiar with. So if I use, classic grime or like classic dubstep samples, but I give it to them like over like a footwork beat, then they're gonna be like, oh, this is sick. You know what I mean? So
Totally.
I did some of those edits for my set at Outlook, and she was like, this is really cool. It's like a new genre almost. Let's make a compilation that's like featuring the sound. So we started thinking about, okay, cool, yeah, let's make a compilation. But then it just made sense to make a label to house that. And we were talking about, goals for, at the time I was throwing parties in New York under a label, not a label, but a brand called Heavy, with another DJ Ripley, who used to tour as a breakcore DJ, but kind of like OG junglist in New York and like activist and educator. So yeah, we were doing this party called Heavy, and but that one was more like about creating space for local. So it was a very low budget thing. It wasn't like I was losing tons of money or putting a lot of money or bringing outside headliners. It was more like if people were in New York and they wanted to play a party that was, most of the attendants were other musicians, other producers, and DJs. So it was kind of a heady space where you knew that you were going to hear stuff that you weren't hearing in other places, but that the vibe would be heavy, you know? Right. So it was like a lot of, I would book people and they would feel free to like explore and play like songs and stuff that they liked that they didn't feel comfortable putting on other dance floors. So it was quite a experimental environment. And to me, like that kind of cross-pollination, experimentation, mixing a lot of different artists is like a big part of what I like to do as an individual, like artistically and as a DJ in my sets. And so it's the same kind of ethos behind curation of label, curation of events. So yeah, she was down with it. And so we just decided like, okay, cool. Like, let's do it. Let's make a thing. Why not?
That is impressive, like on so many levels. Also, what you do is incredibly risky, like with, I mean, it's such a risk that you're taking and bringing people and trying out like experimental things. Did you fear it would fail?
I don't really worry about failure, I guess. Like, it's not really something I think about when I'm thinking about.
But like as a promoter, like you're worried about bringing people in and, you know, didn't you like have those fears about having less people or, you know, the general.
Yeah, not really. I think for me, like, the things that I do in life, I do because I can't imagine not doing them, you know, so they're all really rooted in just a passion and like a need to just do, like you get an idea and you're like, oh, I just need to do this. Like, you know, like you get an idea, it's very clear in your brain and you're like, okay, cool. I need to execute that. So I don't really think about as much, you know, you try to do what you can in terms of making sure that things go well, but you can't really be that connected or invested in or upset by what actually happens, right? Like you kind of just have to be like, okay, cool. I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that this can go well. And then if it doesn't go well, then it's not really a failure. It's more like feedback. Like you're more learning. Okay, like, so this isn't what people want. Or, you know, you're like, well, what didn't work? How can we adjust it? How can we try to make it better next time? If you continue to try to work on that idea, or how do we shift stuff to offer something that actually is valuable to our community so that they'll show up, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do that.
But I've been pretty lucky, I'd say, that you know, the projects that I've done, it really seems like it means something to people. They value it, they're into it, you know, it feels like it's supported, so it gives me motivation to continue for sure.
So you promote events and stuff as well. So what came in first? Were you DJ first and then you got into production?
I was a promoter first. You were actually a promoter. Yeah, I was a promoter before I was a DJ or a producer. Yeah. I used to throw parties with my... So I was a dancer first. So wow. I was known in the scene. I used to dance a lot. I used to be a fire performer. And so when I was, I left New York and I moved to Hawaii and I was living there for a while and I moved into a house where me and my roommates started throwing like these mini festivals, like camping festivals, 250 people, you know, exclusive camping ground, like lock the gate, like just our homies, like, and so that's how I started getting into promoting or throwing events, was because I moved into this house with this woman, who went by Alicia, who was throwing parties and was like, help me throw these parties. And I was like, okay, sick. So we started doing that, and that's kind of how I got the bug for it. And I realized after that it just never went away. Like if I walk into a really sick space, you know, like my first thought in my head is like, I wonder what a party would look like in here. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Because yeah, I mean, for me, like music, like I said before, it really is about this ability to gather people in celebration, you know, like.
Yeah. Like bringing them together, like one.
Yeah.
Bit. Yeah. I feel you. I feel that. So you are so enterprising because you are a record label owner, you're a DJ, you're a promoter, and you just have so much on your plate. How do you manage doing that? That's insanely crazy.
Well, I'm lucky right now that, you know, that music is mostly what I'm doing with my time as far as like, you know, work. Yeah. I used to be a yoga teacher and a massage therapist, and I was trying to manage the music career with the wellness stuff. And, after a certain point, I realized I had to pick because I started like touring a lot and like leaving the city a lot. And so my, you know, getting emails from yoga students like, do you even teach hair anymore? Like, where are you? Yeah. You know, I keep going to your class. You're not there. And yeah. I started realizing that for me, actually, even though I loved teaching and I loved giving massages, everything else started to feel like an inconvenience when it came to measuring it against the things that I needed to do for music. Like I didn't really want to do the other stuff. My heart wasn't into it as much. So then that's when I made a decision, like, okay, like you can't be split in so many directions. Like you really have to show up fully in one place. So just put all your eggs in one basket. Try to do the music thing right now, see if that pans out. And I'm really glad I did it. It was really a conversation with some friends that were a bit older that had been trying to do the, like, these dual life thing. You know, I had a lot of friends in the industry that were like, just like DJing parties, you know, here and there, but they were working like full-time jobs. And talking to them about how their careers have gone and like the progression of it, I realized that none of them had really taken that leap where they were like, I'm gonna fully commit to music and just give it a go and see if it's possible to really build a career out of this. They were kind of always like, well, I need to focus also on this thing that's bringing me stability so that I can also have this avenue of expression. And I just got to a point where I realized that it was kind of background or secondary to me, that I really felt like I had no choice but to try to just focus on the music thing. And so, you know, so all my time is there. And it is a lot of kind of keeping up. But I think... I was a little bit late to this meeting because I was sending an email about, like, you know, art for like for a next EP for the label. So sometimes, you know, things do bleed a little bit, but you try to do as much as you can. I also run a blog called The Footwork Jungle. So like that also, you know, like takes my time and stuff too, doing like premieres for that blog. And I actually am not public about it. Like a lot of people don't know that that's my blog, just so that I don't get as much emails and stuff and requests that I have to sift through. Like, so I've been doing that as a passion project, like, you know, like no clout, just like in the background, like, okay, I do this thing out of like love for this community. But I mean, I guess it is a lot of time. So maybe there's like time management and just like making sure, sometimes things slip, you know, but I have, you know, I try to put everything on the Google calendar and just keep the dates rolling, you know, and also not be so hard on myself if something ends up taking a little longer than you imagined or you hope, you know. Sometimes like just working with other people, especially other artists, it's hard to like push all the time for certain deadlines when you're talking about someone's creative output. So sometimes you have to give like releases a little bit more time than you imagined, or, you know, and just being, I guess, fluid with that.
Yeah, makes sense. What do you produce on today? Like what DAW do you use?
I just use Ableton. It's the only DAW I know.
Right. And so do you have any sort of go-to plugins or effects that you like when you're producing? Just general favorites.
I generally just use a lot of stuff that's native to Ableton. I'll give maybe like a secret. There's a couple of things that I use to help me generate ideas. Like, so some of the stuff that I do is actually quite generative in that, like, if I'm not really sure how to I don't have like a classically trained music background or anything like that. So a lot of it for me is feeling, right? Feeling stuff out. Feel, is this in the right place or not? Does this sound weird? Where's this dissonance? How do I, you know, so it can take me like think a lot longer to figure some of that stuff out than people who've got classically trained, like if they have theory and stuff. But what I do is
play by ear.
Yeah, but some of the tricks that I do is I'll convert stuff to MIDI, and then like I'll basically like use a sample, chop it up so that it's not really like identifiably the original sample, convert it to MIDI, and then move it around a lot and put a lot of effects on it to completely like turn it into something new. And one of the things I use a lot to do that is Buffer Shuffler and like Max for Live. I really like Buffer Shuffler. So it's like if I'm like basically I create like a little melody and then I'm like, how do I create variations of or progress this melody? And I don't have like a clear idea, or I just like want to generate a bunch of ideas. I'll put Buffer Shuffler on it, and then it'll basically spit out a bunch of, you can change the parameters and the settings to get like literally like a million different configurations of that melody.
Wow, that's really cool. Definitely check that out. That is so cool.
Yeah, so that's kind of like a hack or a tip that I use like a lot. And so I use that plugin quite a bit just to help me like generate ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually like just started using serum.
Right.
Because I did and I like that's really cool for like shaping cool like bass noises and stuff
Yeah.
essentially. I just recently did like a 3 week workshop with a producer called Strangia. We actually have an EP. Our next EP on Worst Behavior is by this artist called Strangia. We have a couple collabs on there with TT the Artist, who's a vocalist from Baltimore, and MC Fox, who's a vocalist from Manchester, from the Levels Crew.
Right.
And so he's been educating a lot of people on jungle and drum and bass. So I saw that he was doing a drum and bass workshop like 3 weeks, and it started around my birthday. So I was like, cool, I'll just give this to myself as like a birthday present. And he loves serum, so he was really working in that. So I was like, cool, I'll go cop serum. And so I just started working it, and I'm having fun with that.
That's good. Was it ever hard for you being a woman in charge and, being someone who calls the shot, being such a strong figure in the industry, making bold moves? Was that ever hard for you?
I definitely feel like obviously the industry is getting better, but like you're making techno and you're kind of in that world, and that world has a lot more women in for
Yeah,
like
that is true. Yeah,
representation. But like for
definitely.
bass music, like we don't have a lot of women,
Right.
especially in the United States. A
Yeah,
lot of
I have
my
not seen many women, honestly, in drum and bass. Like, there's just so few. So I
Yeah, you
really
guys have
want to get.
Smokey, right?
Yeah.
Out there you have Smokey and Paper Queen. And it's kind of similar like that in the US. It's kind of a small scene in terms of bass music for femme representation. But it's growing, which is exciting. But yeah, because of that, obviously there's a lot of stuff that you have to deal with. Like I remember, like right now I'm actually I ended up crashing last night at a friend's house as a producer called Suhan. Like a couple of years ago we played Shambhala. We traveled there together, and I got to my stage and I had like all my proper credentials and stuff like that, and the guy, the guard at the backstage, didn't believe me, didn't want to let me in. He, oh, you're playing here? And I was like, yeah. And I showed him my credentials, and he was like, eye rolling, like, really? And so I definitely deal with that kind of stuff because people are not used to seeing people that look like me, playing on stages like that,
Yeah, yeah.
Not just being a woman, but also being a brown woman, like an ethnic woman. There's not a lot of us as well. Like literally I can think of one other bass, and she does like, dubstep, which is an artist called 100 Drums, but she's the only other like bass producer, DJ that's black, like in the US that I can think of right now.
That's
So, and it's a
crazy.
pretty big scene, but it is dominated by like straight white males. For sure.
Yeah.
There's stuff like dealing with like getting kicked on off of stages before I'm supposed to play because like the bouncer doesn't understand that I'm a DJ and won't listen to me, right? Or
Right,
like having to
right.
have the promoter come and like tell them like no, like this is our headliner, like she stays, stuff like that.
Damn.
Or like if you're going to play parties and it's like kind of like a lot of like young straight dudes and they don't always know even like I mean, not to say that I'm not like super feminine or enjoy my sexuality or express it, but I kind of do tend to dress down a little bit, like when I
Yeah.
play. Not all the time, but I'm a bit tomboyish in my style, so sometimes like I think people can be very binary when it comes to sexuality. So it's like if they don't see like a girl presenting herself as like a hot chick or something, they're not really sure what they're supposed to do with that energy, like. No, like they'll
Yeah.
literally like I've walked into rooms full like where I was playing a set at like a festival or like a party or whatever, and walked into like a room that's like full of like a bunch of like young bros, and like literally like people not even say hi or like know how to register your existence. It's like like you're dealing with a lot of like yeah, just like social awkward stuff, things like that.
So did that ever intimidate you?
No, I was raised by a man. Like my dad is an ex-Marine when I was super young, but also my dad's family is like a family of like badass Jamaican women that are. He basically grew up in a matriarchy, like
Yeah.
it's very like. And my dad's a feminist, so he raised me to really believe that women not are just as, capable and powerful, as men are. So I don't think internally I never felt like a sense of competition or intimidation from guys. I also went to a military school for like 3 years that was like mostly guys. And I have to say, like, generally my experience is that like Maybe because of the competition, maybe because it's harder to stand out, but I do feel like I prefer in general working with women when I can. I just feel like they tend to stay like more on top of shit, be more organized, better at communication, better at cooperation. So if anything, maybe I wear my femininity more with a sense of pride, I think,
I feel like
than
that's so important.
I guess, yeah, maybe I'm pretty lucky that it doesn't really bother me. Like, I don't take any of that personally. You know, it's
That's
just kind of
amazing. That's how it should be.
now with the increase, like more and more women in the industry out there, I think those instances will happen less frequently. Less women will have to deal with them. You know, I definitely have
Definitely.
girlfriends that have been around for a lot longer than me who have like horror stories. And for sure, I've definitely had to deal with like weird shit, like, you know, promoters, like, you know, hitting on you and like all that kind of weird stuff.
Of
But
course, yeah.
you know, or even like I did get banned from like a really big venue in New York once because the promoters had because I called the guys out on some stuff they were doing wrong, and to my face they were very apologetic and like admitted that they were at fault. And then behind my back, several promoters were trying to throw parties there and talked to the main booker about booking me and said a bunch of horrible things about me, you
That
know,
is
to the
so
people behind
shitty.
my back. Like, I didn't get booked at that event like ever again for I mean at that venue until that guy got fired. A woman took his place, and eventually I started getting booked there again. You
Dude,
know, so
that's
there are obviously
ridiculous.
stuff like that that happens where you're just like, whatever. But again, I think it's kind of like par for the course. Like, I don't think that that incident would have went down the way it was if I was a guy. You know, like, I think a lot of it definitely had to do with like the body that I'm in. Holding people accountable is important to me. Like, you know, I do think it's important to have fun, but like if we're also taking care of like the business end of things, like there's a lot of really flaky people in music and in entertainment industry as well, where yeah, I think it's important to communicate clearly and professionally and hold people accountable to the promises that they make and call them out when they're not acting right, you know?
I totally agree. Yeah, I
Yeah.
couldn't agree more. So DJ Mag listed your record label, Wrong Behaviors Rec, as one of the labels to look out for in 2020. How does that make you feel? I mean, I know this is such a cliche question, but how does that make you feel?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's been great to have the support of a publication like DJ Mag or, you know, Mix Mag, like Resident Advisor. It's always like a huge, like I just saw this morning too, you know, like Jay Kenzo and his like new September mix like put, you know, one of the tracks from our new compilation in there. When you get that kind of support, it's validating, you know, for obviously the artists that are affiliated with you, but also for your hard work when you're like, cool, like this is valuable. There's a place for this. Like people care about it. Like I can continue to be motivated to grow it because obviously, like, there's a lot of people who are passionate, inspired, and like want to do music stuff, but a very few percentage of us actually are able to build it into a thing that's sustainable. So, you know, I feel like that kind of press helps to encourage you, like, because it's not easy, you know, it's
Yeah.
there's all kinds of there's a lot of work and a lot of struggle and a lot of, you know, like just managing and like hustle that goes into doing it. So when you get little things like that, you start to realize, cool, like it's not just a thing that's in my head. It's not just a thing that's between me and my friends, but you know, you have some like
It's bigger than that.
international, yeah, it's
Yeah.
become bigger than that. So yeah, it only helps to support what you're doing and the desire to grow it for sure.
Right. So would you like to share some of your fondest memories that you've had, over the years of doing what you do?
Oh wow. That's a crazy one, I think, but there are a lot of memories I'm really thrilled about. Some of the things that have happened that mean the most are usually just like small interpersonal connections. Like when I, you know, like recently I got a message, like a DM from a woman in the UK, somewhere in the UK, and she had watched like a stream that I had done for a 2020, like Ivy Labs label. So she watched the stream that I had done and afterwards sent me a DM and told me that the stream watching it was during, you know, the height in the middle of the pandemic and stuff like that. And she is a new mom and she hasn't really done anything kind of like for herself, and she's just been being a mom, and She told me, like, I saw you play at Dimensions Festival last year, and that was my first time doing something for myself. And I just, my first time feeling free and dancing and really inspired and like open. And I was just able to have a release that I think I really needed. And so when I watched your 2020 stream, it reminded me of that feeling of the first time that I had seen you play. And I just really think it's important. I wanted to tell you that, it means a lot what you're doing. You're creating, soundtracks for some of the best moments in people's lives, and like, please don't stop. So it's more like little things like that, that
That is
like
beautiful.
inspire me a lot to realize, like, because I think, I was kind of talking about this last night. I used to be working with the healing arts, wellness, and that meant a lot to me, and I really loved it. And then when I made this shift to being an artist and doing music, I still sometimes struggle with the question of like, is this enough? Like, am I using my energy in a constructive way? Am I giving back to, like, at the end of the day, we have nothing but gratitude for being here. Like, you could literally be nothing. We could be nothing. Like, the
Right.
option to being alive in this body is just not existing, being nothing. It's mind-blowing that we even exist, that we're here, and that we're able to experience the things that we do. So this gratitude lends itself to wanting to, to be, to make sure that like you're giving back to this entity, this thing we call life,
Yeah.
in a way that's really quote unquote good or productive or constructive, or at least like I have this need, right?
Yeah.
So as an artist, sometimes you wonder, like, is this just selfish? Like, am I really doing anything for anyone? But then
Yeah.
when you get messages like that, when you're in the when you're at a party and you're playing, you're there's the moment where you're playing music for people, and it feels like everyone is on the same vibe and the same wave, and like we're one thing,
Yeah.
like breathing and
Yeah.
dancing together. Like, those are the that's what I live for,
Yeah, I do really get that. I love that feeling as well. That's amazing. It's just like even you're complete strangers, but there's just something about the music in that moment that just binds us together, and just somehow we don't feel like strangers in that moment, which
Yeah,
is just
like
so
in that
good.
moment,
Yeah,
we
it
remember.
is.
It's like we remember that we're all brothers and sisters.
Yeah, right. I thought I was the only one who thought that way. That's crazy. Also, I mean, having had this amazing journey that you've had and so much more that you're going to do, what would you say to someone who is just about relatively new and still paving the way?
I would say just trust your instincts, trust your sound. Like for instance, yeah, I am doing something really niche, but it's gotten me on some really big stages, and a lot of people will try to convince you that you need to fit into something else. They'll try to make you be like, oh yeah, to make it, to be able to do it, you need to look like this, you got to change your look, you need your branding to look like this, you need your sound to be like this. And it's like I personally just think you need to be genuine. Like that's what you were put on earth as a unique thing, as a unique energy and a unique entity. And I think it's your job as an artist to try to amplify that as much as you can. Like that's kind of what it is, I just say like, forget the fads, like just really listen to your heart and stick with that and just do it because you can't imagine not doing it,
Right. So you're also debunking the fact that niche music, I mean, because I mean, people do tell you to like do something more commercial, like maybe say big room or just something that's more mainstream to be more known because that just has more audience and more traction. Basically, to ignore all those instincts and do what you want to do because being niche can also get you places, right? I mean, because usually
For
that's something you don't
sure.
hear people say that.
For sure. I do think because for instance, like the footwork community, it's a small scene, but it is international and it is really passionate. So I have a lot of friends that play like in the US festival circuit and they don't get to tour as much internationally. And so they'll ask me like, how do you get to go to all these places? And I'm like, it's because of my community. It's small, but it's passionate and it's worldwide,
Yeah.
So it's a small movement, but we're everywhere. And so that affords me opportunities to like, yeah, go to India, like go to China, go to like Russia, go to, all of these niche places because there's not a lot of people doing it. So,
Right.
you know, like you kind of stand out in that sense. I mean, look at like Sherelle, you know what I mean? Like,
right,
she's literally
yeah.
one of the most famous DJs in the world right now doing
yeah.
this sound. Before she popped, like on Boiler Room, like a lot of people didn't know what that was. They didn't know what the sound was. You know, they just were like, what is this? It's new. And I get that kind of feedback too when I'm playing on these like big festival stages. You know, like I get a lot of people just being like, I don't even know what that music is. Like,
Yeah.
you know, the biggest kind of opportunity I had to play was like New Year's Eve one time, like opening for Bass Nectar a couple years ago. There were like 26,000 kids there. So I got all these DMs from kids being like, I don't even know what this music was that you were playing. I've never heard anything like it, but it was really cool, you know? And it's like, that's, you know, to me, that's like everything. Being able to introduce people to new sounds and your friends' music and your community. Like, I feel like you got to rep where you're from, you know?
Yeah, that is amazing. That is really inspiring. Thank you so much, Anna, for giving me your time and coming on. You've literally given me so many things to look forward to. I'm going to go check out some new things that you did tell me about. And you are incredibly inspirational. You should know that.
Thanks for having me, Nita. It's really nice to connect with you.
It is
and
really
I hope
nice
you stay
to connect
connected.
With you as well.
Yeah.
All right. You have a good day. Thank you.
You too. Have a fantastic day.
So that was lovely Anna Morgan. And if you guys have any sort of questions that you would like me to ask my guests in the future episodes, please feel free to send me a message. You can send me a voice message by clicking on the link below, or you could also send me a message on my Instagram handle, which is @NitaChakrabarty, spelled as @NitaChakrabarty. And I will see you guys next week. Thank you so much for tuning in.